Well, hello, everybody. Nice to see you guys back again back there in the corner. Well, today I'm kind of go off a little bit what you just phrased here in your testimony, that we're going through some times that we just don't know what's going on. So I want to go back and visit the story of Esther. We're not going to read the whole thing. I'll condense it a little bit. But there's some aspects there that I think we can glean from that maybe will help us out. How many is very familiar with the story of Esther? Okay, a couple hands went up. So when this takes place, Israel is in exile. And they're somewhat strewn about. And Esther is parentless and ends up basically adopted or being cared for by an older cousin, Mordecai. And he is a godly gentleman and wants to do things God's way. And they live in Susa, which is a citadel, or basically like a capital city, or where the king resides at, and in Persia. And it's King Xerxes who is presiding at the moment. And this King Xerxes has built up quite a kingdom and has been fairly successful, and he decides he needs to promote that with everybody he can think of, in a sense, and he throws a huge party. It lasts 180 days, and he calls in all of his officials from the realm, throughout his realm, calls those in, and it sounds like he even calls in some people from outside his kingdom so he can show off to them his achievements. And at the end of this 180 days, he decides that's not even a big enough party or enough of a party. He decides to throw another party for 7 more days, and this time it's for, in a sense, more the locals, those within Susa, and pretty much everybody. It says the upper crust and the lower crust, throws a party for them. And during this 7 days, his queen, Vashti, is also hosting a party for the females within the at the same time in a different part of the palace, in a sense. And during this, King Xerxes decides he hasn't shown enough. He now has to show off his queen. And he sends word over to his queen, who's hosting the female side of the party, to come over, and he wants her to dance in front of his cronies, in a sense. And she says no. What an uproar this becomes. This is the king, and a female just said no. What is he supposed to do? Can you imagine what's running through his mind right now? Because he just spent over half a year proving to everybody how powerful he is. And now all of a sudden, his wife, the queen, says, "You're not more powerful than me, because I still have the ability to say no. And I'm going to do it in front of everybody." So he turns to his officials and he says, "What am I supposed to do?" And they remind him, as this story gets out, and it's going to get out, every female in the kingdom is going to go against her man. They're going to start saying no. So you do absolutely have to do something about this. So he sends out letters to every corner of his kingdom declaring that the queen is never to come before him, the king, and that her royal position is to be given over to another. Pretty serious stuff. He puts his foot down. Then after some time, his anger subsides a little bit, and he remembers that he had a second part to his edict, the fact that he said he would turn over her position to another. And in Esther 2, chapter 2, starting in verse 2 through 4, he says, "Let a search be made for a beautiful young virgin, or for four beautiful young virgins for the king. Let the king appoint commissioners in every province of his realm to bring all these beautiful young women into the harem at the citadel of Susa. Let them be placed under the care of Haggai, the king's eunuch, who is in charge of the women, and let beauty treatments be given to them. Then let the young woman who pleases the king be queen instead of Vashti." This advice appealed to the king, and he followed it. So now there's this letter goes out, you know, we're having a beauty contest. Anybody can enter. Excuse me. Any virgin can enter. Mordecai, who again is somehow the caretaker of Esther, hears of it and decides that he wants to enroll his cousin. And he's, since they're right there in the citadel anyhow, he walks her up to the palace. What's that? Niece, cousin, it's a toss-up. They're close kinsmen, but he's in care of her. Some translations say that he's an uncle. Some say he's a cousin. So, he decides to bring Esther before Haggai the eunuch, and she wins the attention of Haggai with her beauty, and is therefore placed into the palace and to go through these beauty rituals or purification that lasts for an entire year. So for an entire year, she's going to be in the palace, and she's going through beauty treatment after beauty treatment. I don't know if she's supposedly one of the most beautiful in the land. I don't know what they thought they could do to her, but make her even more beautiful. But for a year, they're going through this. And during this time, she actually continues to gain favor among those who are around her. She's well-liked. There's something about her personality that really shines through. And when it's finally her turn to be brought before Xerxes, he chooses her and gives her the role of his queen. Mordecai had told her to keep her heritage to herself. So up till now, no one knows that she's a Jew or suspecting that she's a Jew. And she just kind of kept that quiet, just doesn't bring attention to it, including the king. He doesn't realize it either. And she's of the tribe of Benjamin. One day, Mordecai, who is a prominent figure in town, is around some of the king's men. And he overhears a conversation where some of them would like to overthrow King Xerxes. He takes that information back to his niece or his cousin, Esther, gets word to her, tell her what he heard. She then goes to the king and says, "Mordecai has passed along this information." Clearly gives him the credit for passing along this information. The matter is investigated and it's found to be true, and the individuals involved are taken dealt with harshly, rightfully so. But there's another of the king's highest officials who wants to cause harm, not to the king, but to the Jews. Because as he comes and goes out of the palace, there's a Jew that he bumps into on a regular basis who refuses to give him the honor and glory he thinks he deserves. And it's Mordecai, Esther's uncle or cousin. Mordecai doesn't bow down to him, doesn't, you know, give him the time of day, in a sense, that a high-ranking official in the king of the king maybe thought they deserved. So in Esther 3, so turn to chapter 3 now, in verse 8, and this man's name is Haman, or Haman. Then Haman said to King Ahasuerus, or Xerxes, "There's a certain people scattered and separated among the peoples in all the provinces of your kingdom. Their laws are different from those of every other people, and they do not keep the king's laws, so that it is not appropriate for the king to tolerate them. If it pleases the king, let a decree be issued for their destruction, and I will pay 10,000 talents of silver into the hands of those who have charged of the king's business, so that they may put it into the king's treasuries." So the king took his signet ring from his hand, gave it to Haman of Hammedatha, the Agagite, the enemy of the Jews. And the king said to Haman, "The money is given to you and the people as well. Do with them as it seems good to you." And we already learned early on in the story that this king doesn't think a whole lot before he does or says something. If he thinks it's going to be a benefit to him, he's all for it. Didn't think this one through very good. Didn't ask very many questions, it doesn't sound like. Just said, go ahead and take care of it. Yeah, Lori?
Also, to know that once a king's decree has gone out, it cannot be taken back.
I was going to get to that, but yes. So, of the Medes and Persians, the law was if a king decided something, stamped it, sent it out, there was no way to undo it. It was going to be done, period. And so that's something to keep in mind. Then, let's see. Again, Haman didn't want to just kill Mordecai. He wanted to destroy the Jews, period. He's got quite the chip on his shoulder. In verse 12, then the king's secretaries were summoned on the 13th day of the first month, and an edict, according to all that Haman commanded, was written to the king's satraps and to the governors over all the provinces and to the officials of all the peoples, to every province in his own script and every people in its own language. It is written in the name of the king Ahasuerus and sealed with the king's ring. Letters were sent by couriers to all the king's provinces, given orders to destroy, to kill, and annihilate all Jews, young and old, women and children, in one day, the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, and to plunder their goods. So in the 12th month of the year, on the 13th day, the Jews were to be taken out, annihilated. Queen Esther, she's unaware of what's just taken place or what's going on, and finds out that Mordecai is in grief about something. She doesn't really know what's going on, so she sends some of her attendants to go find out from Mordecai what's going on, what's up here. And the attendants come back and they tell her what's happening. And she then sends word back to Mordecai, reminding him of something. That as a queen, or anybody for that matter, no one is to approach the king unless the king beckons them, calls them, invites them. And there's a slight exception here. If you're feeling really brave, you can approach the king And when he sees you, if he actually wants you to come forward, he'll extend his scepter so that you can touch it, in a sense, receive his blessing. But if he doesn't extend that scepter, you're to be killed. Because he didn't ask for you. You're interrupting the king. So she sends back to Mordecai a reminder that, you know, even the queen can't just approach the king with a matter like this anytime she wants. She has to be called. And she's in a harem with many other women. And the king at will call one of those women when he wants to. And for 30 days, she hasn't been called. She doesn't know if she'll ever be called again. She could be, literally be forgotten. In Esther 4, in verse 13, Mordecai told them to reply to Esther, "Do not think that in the king's palace you will escape any more than all the other Jews. For if you keep silence at such a time as this, relief and deliverance will rise for the Jews from another quarter." Listen to what was just said. Mordecai understands God's going to preserve the Jews. But he just told Esther, you have an opportunity here. You either take advantage of the opportunity, or if you decide not to, God's going to take care of it through some other means. And it'll be you that will not escape. But you and your father's family will perish. So again, he lets her know that she has a choice. But if she chooses to ignore this opportunity, her and her father's family is going to perish. Sounds like a curse, doesn't it? And then he says, who knows? Perhaps you have come to a royal dignity for just such a time as this. Maybe you were put here for a reason. Then Esther said in reply to Mordecai, go, gather all the Jews to be found in Susa, and hold a fast on my behalf, and neither eat nor drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my maids will also fast as you do, and after that I will go to the king, though it is against the law, and if I perish, I perish. She's willing to give up her life so that she can save the Jews, if there's opportunity to save the Jews. Mordecai then went away and did everything as Esther had ordered him. And after 3 days, she approaches the king. And he extends the scepter. Again, something about her personality and her beauty, whether he loved her or not, he enjoyed being around her. He extends his scepter. And then he says, what is your desire? He knew she was there for a reason. It wasn't just companionship. And I believe he states it, up to half the kingdom. What is your desire? He's willing to give her pretty much anything she would want. And the reply is, I would like you and Haman to come to dinner with me this evening. And the king says, no problem. Be glad to. Somebody go tell Haman. And so that evening, they have a dinner. And at the dinner, again, the king is concerned about his queen Esther, wants to know what's going on. Ask her again, what's your desire? And she puts him off one more time. And she says, I'd like to throw a banquet tomorrow in you and Haman's honor. I'd like the both of you to be there for the banquet that I will put together. Would you come? And he says, we will come. Now Haman gets done with his first dinner, and he leaves to go home, and he's on cloud nine. He can't wait to get home and tell his wife, his sons, his servants, all the people in the neighborhood, in a sense, look how I am being treated by even the queen. The queen has invited me to a special banquet for only me and the king, only the two of us. But there's a problem. Because on his way home, he sees Mordecai, who doesn't give him the time of day, doesn't give him the honor he deserves. And Esther 5, verse 13, he's talking with his wife and those in his household, Haman is. He says, yet all of this does me no good so long as I see the Jew Mordecai sitting at the king's gate. Then his wife Zeresh and all of his friends said to him, let a gallows of 50 cubits high be made, and in the morning tell the king to have Mordecai hanged on it. Then go with the king to the banquet in good spirits. This advice pleased Haman, and he had the gallows made. A cubit's about 18 inches, a foot and a half. This is 75 feet high. Now, some versions say it was a gallows to be hung on. Some say it was more like a big pole in the ground that one would be plunged upon, you know, just stuck into. 75 feet tall. Do you think the neighborhood didn't see that? Moving over to chapter 6. We'll read a bit here in chapter 6, verse 1. On that night, the king could not sleep. He gave orders to bring the book of records, the annals, and they were read to the king. And it was found written how Mordecai had told about Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's eunuchs who guarded the threshold and who had conspired to assassinate King Azarias. Then the king said, what honor or distinction have we bestowed on Mordecai for this? And the king's servants who attended him said, nothing's been done for him. And the king said, who is in the court? Now Haman had just entered the outer court of the king's palace to speak to the king about having Mordecai hung on the gallows that he had prepared for. Think about this. The king can't sleep. It's very late at night, very early in the morning. What, 3 o'clock in the morning? And Haman's so excited to get his evil plan taken care of that he's run to the palace to be sitting out in the court. So as soon as the king is awake and enters, you know, his throne room, he could be one of the first people in line. King says, who is in the court? Now, Haman had just entered the outer court of the king's palace to speak to the king about having Mordecai hung on the gallows that he had prepared for him. So the king's servants told him, Haman is there standing in the court. And the king says, let him come in. So Haman came in, and the king said to him, what shall be done for the man whom the king wishes to honor? And Haman says to himself, would the king like to wish to honor more than me? So Haman said to the king, for the man whom the king wishes to honor, let royal robes be brought, which the king has worn, and a horse that the king has ridden with a royal crown on its head. Let the robes and the horse be handed over to one of the king's most noble officials. Let him robe the man whom the king wishes to honor, and let him conduct the man on horseback through the open square of the city, proclaiming before him, thus shall it be done for the man whom the king wishes to honor. Haman's thinking, I can't wait to get that robe on, that crown on, sit up on that horse, and then parade it around the town square. Finally, I get my due. Then the king said to Haman, quickly, take the robes and the horse, as you have said, and do so to the Jew Mordecai. Can you imagine the look on Haman's face? Because he went there to tell the king something, and he kind of gets interrupted by the king, who has this thing that has to be done right now. And now he has to go and parade Mordecai through the streets with the robe, with the horse, and with the crown. And proclaiming at the same time that the king is honoring Mordecai. And so leave out nothing that you have mentioned. The king tells Haman, don't miss out on any of that. So Haman took the robes and the horse and robed Mordecai and led him riding through the open square of the city, proclaiming, thus shall it be done for the man whom the king wishes out. Keep in mind, this means Haman had to go to Mordecai's house, look him up, and say, you got to come with me. Here, throw these on. Come on. Let's get this over with. Again, can you imagine what's going through Haman's head right now? Esther 6 and verse 12. Then Mordecai returned to the king's gate, but Haman hurried to his house, mourning and with his head covered. Now keep in mind, he just had to go around the city square, so he's hoping that his neighborhood doesn't know much about this, or that most people didn't pay attention, or at least word didn't spread, you know, yet. But when Haman told his wife Zeresh and all of his friends everything that had happened to him, his advisors and his wife Zeresh said to him, if Mordecai, before whom your downfall has begun, is one of the Jewish people, you will not prevail against him, but will surely fall before him. They get it. Something big just happened. And while they were still talking with him, the king's eunuchs arrived and said, Haman, hurry up. You're supposed to be at a banquet with the queen, remember? Come on, let's get going. And at the banquet, the king again asked Esther for her desire. What is it that you want? What's bothering you? What's on your mind? Chapter 7 and verse 3. Then Queen Esther answered, if I have won your favor, O king, and if it pleases the king, let my life be given to me. That is my petition, and the lives of my people, that is my request. Can you imagine what's going through the king's mind right now? What do you mean, your life be given to you? Your people? Who? Someone's out to get you? What are you talking about? What's happening? Why don't I know anything about that? Can you imagine all the things flooding through his head right now? The king says, as it said to Queen Esther, who is he and where is he who has presumed to do this? And he probably thinks behind his back. And Esther said, it's a foe, an enemy, this wicked Haman right there. Then Haman was terrified before the king and the queen. Yeah, how are you supposed to escape this one? The king rose from the feast in wrath and went to the palace garden. But Haman stayed to beg for his life from Queen Esther, for he saw that the king had determined to destroy him. He knows what the personality of this king is. When the king returned from the palace garden to the banquet hall, Haman had thrown himself on the couch where Esther was reclining. He's probably begging and pleading for mercy. But kind of just like the king, you don't approach the king without being requested. Haman literally has invaded her personal space. And the king just happens to walk in right then and says, what is this? The king says, will he even assault the queen in my presence, in my own house? As the word left the mouth of the king, they covered Haman's face. Then Harbona, one of the eunuchs in attendance on the king, said, look, the very gallows that Haman has prepared for Mordecai, whose words saved the king, stands at Haman's house, 75 feet high. And the king said, hang him on that. So they hanged Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai, and the anger of the king was abated. On that day, now we move over to Esther 8 and verse 1. On that day, King Azarias gave to Queen Esther the house of Haman, the enemy of the Jews, and Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had told what he was to her. So now the king understands the relationship between the queen and Mordecai. He understands that they're Jews, and he understands that there's Jews living throughout his kingdom. And the king took off his signet ring, which he had taken from Haman. Haman had the signet ring and gave it to Mordecai. So Esther set Mordecai over the house of Haman. Then Esther spoke again to the king. She fell at his feet, weeping and pleading with him to avert the evil design of Haman, the Agagite, and the plot that he had devised against the Jews. Again, on the 12th month of the 13th day, all the Jews are to be destroyed. That word's already been sent out, and it's going to be done, period. And Esther rose and stood and the king held out the golden scepter to Esther. So here's another potential. She could have been killed right there again. But again, he received her. And Esther rose and stood before the king. She said, "If it pleases the king, and if I have won his favor, and if the thing that seems right before the king, and I have his approval, let an order be written to revoke the letters devised by Haman, son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, which he wrote, giving orders to destroy the Jews who are in all the provinces of the king. For how can I bear to see the calamity that is coming on my people, or how can I bear to see the destruction of my kindred?" Then King Ahasuerus said to Queen Esther, and to the Jew Mordecai, "See, I have given Esther the house of Haman, and they have hanged him on the gallows because he plotted to lay hands on the Jews. You may write as you please with regard to the Jews in the name of the king and seal it with the king's ring, for an edict written in the name of the king and sealed with the king's ring cannot be revoked." Gave Mordecai full authority to write anything he wanted. The king's secretaries were summoned at that time, and in the third month, which is the month of Sivan, and on the 23rd day, an edict was written according to all that Mordecai commanded to the Jews and to the satraps and the governors and the officers or officials of the provinces from India to Ethiopia, 127 provinces, to every province in its own script and to every people in its own language, and also to the Jews in their script and their language. He wrote letters in the name of King Ahasuerus, sealed them with the king's ring, and sent them by mounted couriers riding on fast steeds bred from the royal hand. By these letters, the king allowed the Jews who were in every city to assemble and defend their lives, to destroy, to kill, and to annihilate any armed force of any people or province that might attack them, with their children and women, and to plunder their goods. So Mordecai wrote, the tables are turned 180 degrees. Now, anybody who has appeared to want to go after the Jews, the same things are going to be done to them. On a single day throughout all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, on the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, a copy of the writ was to be issued as a decree in every province and published to all peoples, and the Jews were to be ready on that day to take revenge on their enemies. So the couriers mounted on their swift royal steeds, hurried out, urged by the king's command, and the decree was issued in the citadel of Susa. Then Mordecai went out from the presence of the king, wearing royal robes of blue and white, with a great golden crown and a mantle of fine linen, and purple, while the city of Susa shouted and rejoiced. For the Jews there was light and gladness, joy and honor. Now think about what had been going through their minds. Just a handful of weeks before, this letter had come into their midst saying that they were going to be annihilated in the 12th month. And now another letter comes out saying that they can defend themselves to the exact same extent that was going to be dealt on them. But think, prior to this second letter, what was going through their minds. What's happening? Why is it happening? Why us? What did we do? What can I do? Can I flee? What do we do? Chapter 8, verse 17, in every province, in every city, wherever the king's command and his edict came, there was gladness and joy among the foods, among the Jews, a festival and a holiday. Furthermore, many of the peoples of the country professed to be Jews because the fear of the Jews had fallen upon them. Now in chapter 9 and verse 1, now in the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, on the 13th day, when the king's command and edict were about to be executed, on the very day when the enemies of the Jews hoped to gain power over them, but which had been changed to a day when the Jews would gain power over their foes, the Jews gathered in their cities throughout all the provinces of the king Ahasuerus to lay hands on those who had sought their ruin, and no one could withstand them. There was Hamans all over the land. Wasn't just one. There was some in every city, in every town. And the Jews gathered in their cities throughout all the provinces of the king to lay hands on those who had sought their ruin, and no one could withstand them because the fear of them had fallen upon all peoples. All the officials of the provinces, the satraps and the governors and the royal officials were supporting the Jews because the fear of Mordecai had fallen upon them. For Mordecai was powerful in the king's house, and his fame spread throughout all the provinces as the man Mordecai grew more and more powerful. So the Jews struck down all their enemies with the sword, slaughtering and destroying them, and they did as they pleased to those who hated them. In the citadel of Susa, the Jews killed and destroyed 500 people. So in the hometown of the king, 500 more people. They killed Peshandadatha, Delphon, Asapha, Paratha, Adalia, Eridatha, Parmashita, Arazai, Eridai, Vazatha. The 10 sons of Haman, son of Hamadatha, the enemy of the Jews, but they did not touch their plunder. That very day, the number of those killed in the citadel of Susa was reported to the king. And the king said to Queen Esther, in the citadel of Susa, the Jews have killed 500 people and also the 10 sons of Haman. What have they done in the rest of the king's provinces? Now, what is your petition? It shall be granted to you. And what further is your request? It shall be fulfilled. And after Esther said, if it pleases the king, let the Jews who are in Susa be allowed tomorrow also to do according to this day's edict. And let the 10 sons of Haman be hung on the gallows. So the king commanded this to be done. A decree was issued in Susa, and the 10 sons of Haman were hanged. And the Jews who were in Susa gathered also on the 14th day of the month of Adar, and they killed 300 persons in Susa. But they did not touch the plunder. Now the other Jews who were in the king's provinces also gathered to defend their lives, and gained relief from their enemies, and killed 75,000 of those who hated them. But they laid no hands on the plunder. This was on the 13th day of the month of Adar, and on the 14th day they rested and made that day a feasting and gladness. But the Jews who were in Susa gathered on the 13th day and on the 14th day and rested on the 15th day, making that day a feasting of gladness. Therefore the Jews of the villages who live in the open towns hold the 14th day of the month of Adar as a day of gladness and feasting, a holiday in which they send gifts of food to one another. And we know that as the Jewish tradition, Purim. Nothing wrong in keeping it, but it is just simply that. It's a tradition. So again, think back on how Mordecai, Esther, the Jews felt through all of these events that spanned over months. What was going through their mind? If you've ever read the story of Esther, the entire book of Esther, it takes maybe an hour. But if you read through there, God is never mentioned once. So on the surface, the Jews could have wondered, Mordecai could have wondered, Esther could have wondered, where's God in all of this? What's happening? Why has he abandoned us? And so on the surface, it looks like it just so happens that some things took place, but God wasn't in the picture. It just so happens that Xerxes rises to power as king. It just so happens that he throws a party. That Queen Vashti says no. It just so happens. That officials tell the king to replace the queen. That a competition for a new queen should be held. It just so happens that Mordecai brings her to the eunuchs, or to the eunuch, and that she finds favor in his sight. And it just so happens that she is chosen by the king to be the next queen. It just so happens that Mordecai hears about a plot. It just so happens that his name is actually recorded in the records of saving the king from that plot. Just so happens that Mordecai doesn't bow down to Haman. And that Esther is received by the king when she could have been killed. It just so happens that her delays, her desire for one more night, planning the banquet for the next day, and as Haman leaves prior to the banquet, Mordecai once again doesn't bow down, and Haman is mad about that again. And it just so happens that that anger is enough to make Haman put his plan into action much sooner than what he had dealt out through the king's order. And it just so happens that he shows up at the palace late at night, early in the morning. Just so happens that the king can't sleep that same night. And just so happens that the king reads of Mordecai in the records. Just so happens that Haman's in the court. Just so happens that Haman doesn't get to speak of his plan. And that the king honors Mordecai through Haman. And just so happens that Haman goes home to sulk just to be interrupted in his sulking by the king's officials to be brought back to the banquet. It just so happens that the king leaves only to return and find Haman abusing the queen. It just so happens that the eunuch tells the king of the gallows that Haman had built for Mordecai. And it just so happens that the king has Haman put on those same gallows. And it just so happens that the king issues a new decree that delivers the Jews. And it just so happens that Mordecai takes Haman's place. God is in everything at all times. He had a plan going long before this earth was created. He created us as part of his plan, just like he created Esther and Mordecai and even Haman. Do we look back and see God's hand in every part of our life? Because in the moment, the Jews, Esther, and even Mordecai, who was a godly man, could have been asking themselves, where's God at in all of this? Why is he letting this happen? He wasn't out to destroy the Jews. He was out to deliver the Jews. And he was using these characters or these individuals as part of the deliverance. God's not distant from us. He's in the middle of acting out his plan. But are we distant from him? Are we allowing him to put his plan in motion, no matter what it feels like in the moment? Right now, we have opportunity, and so is a lot of our people. What is God doing? Why is he allowing this to happen? Why has he put somebody in office that would save us? Why is he allowing riots to take place? Why do we have to wear masks all the time? Why isn't he healing us from this? People are getting frustrated and angry. Why isn't he just being gentle and kind with us? He's got a plan in motion. And he's created and he's chosen us to be participants in that plan. But just like Mordecai said to Esther, for if you keep silent at such a time as this, relief and deliverance will rise for the Jews from another quarter. But you and your father's family will perish. Who knows? Perhaps you have come to royal dignity just for such a time as this. Have come to royal dignity. What have we been told that we're going to be in his kingdom? Royal dignity, kings and priests. So, are we about to perish? Or are we about to be delivered? That's all I have. Any thoughts or comments? Well, thank you, but I didn't write it. Yeah, Tom?
Well, the question, though, is God not in the story? Well, the fact that the story is in God's Word in the Bible points to a lesson that we ought to take for, you know, our understanding and everything, that we have to have a lot of faith in God to bring us through these times. Yeah. So you had a very good message today. Thank you.
No, there's some that want to argue that the books of Esther and Ruth shouldn't be part of the canon because they just don't fit in with the rest of it for some reason. But I think we can see, no, they really do. I wanted to look up, does anybody know the legacy of Esther after the fact? Her genealogy going forward after all of this, is it mentioned? I wanted to say that she was part of King David's line, but I know Boaz. Okay, is there anything, does anybody remember anything about her lineage after this? Okay, so I was... And I wish we knew a little bit more about Mordecai, you know, what became of him, because at the end of this story, he's a very prominent official, much like Joseph was in the time of Egypt in the Phantom. Now, Mordecai is in almost the exact same position in this Persian kingdom. He is really high up there, and the people respect him. You know, so I know there's more to the story, but you know, we don't have that. So that is interesting too. Anything else? All right, let's finish up with a song.